17. 1 Samuel chapter 17, and with your open Bible and your study guide there in your lap, we have this wonderful privilege of looking into the sacred scriptures. The 17th chapter of 1 Samuel. For two sermons, we looked at facing the storms of life and how these storms can quickly cause fear to make its way into our heart. One of the heart issues is fear, and how facing these storms of life can allow fear to quickly come in and overwhelm us. This morning, we're going to draw out spiritual and practical applications by looking at the story, a familiar story, of David and Goliath. As most of you know, the giant David faced was about 9.5 feet tall, a Philistine warrior. Our giants are figurative. And they stand before us as a troubled marriage, spiritual and moral failure, rebellious children, health issues in our own life or in the life of our loved ones, financial pressure, sinful habits that seem unbreakable, difficult relatives, our co-workers, our neighbors, a lack of discipline and being a student of God, fill in the blank. Just finished a book 2 weeks ago entitled The Enemy Within. Pastor Cal encouraged me to read it. He said he felt like it was one of the best books that he has ever read on the issue of the depravity of our hearts. Straight talk about the power and defeat of sin, the enemy within. First book I have ever read by this author, Chris Lundgaard. And this book is adapted from the very difficult, challenging book of John Owen, the great Puritan, who someone had their grandson named after him. Chapter 1 begins this way. All I wanted to do was surprise my wife. Since we had moved into our new house almost a year ago, the refrigerator door handle had been on the wrong side. I'd put off moving it because of my clumsiness with mechanical things, but on this Thursday afternoon, while my wife was at work, I was set to redeem myself and right the wrong. I was halfway through the job. I had the refrigerator and freezer doors off and wanted to get them back on soon so nothing would spoil. I was at the pivotal step of swapping the hinges from the right side of the refrigerator to the left when I realized that each hinge was fastened by two torque screws. Two lousy torque screws. There's only one tool in the universe that can safely remove a torque screw, a torque socket. And I didn't have a torque socket. Right then, my three boys decided to move their traveling sibling fighting show in the middle of my angst. I lost it. I let them have it. Though they didn't deserve it, they stared at me as if I was a monster from Alpha Centauri while I ranted in an unknown tongue. In mid-fit, I had an out-of-body experience. I saw my contorted red face screaming at my charming boys, and I knew at once I was doing something evil. So I stopped. I stopped and asked for their forgiveness, right? Wrong. Something had control of me. It was as if an alien had invaded my body and was forcing me to do his bidding. It was long after they had fled from my wrath before I recovered my sanity and my conscience and humbled myself before them in apologies. I spent the next several days feeling like a whipped puppy. Was I really that wicked? How could I hurt my children like that? Had I done irreparable harm? Would they forgive me? Would God forgive me? And then he asked, anything like that ever happened to you? Your heart issue may not be anger. It may be that you have your giant is despair. You constantly have to fight being encouraged. It may be foolishness. Consistently, not once in a while, consistently you just make stupid decisions. One after another after another. You're in a ditch and you keep on digging. You lay down the shovel to rent a bobcat. It may be pride. And we'll deal with folly and pride in just a few weeks. But fill in the blank. When you stand face to face against a giant, here's what we know. Giants intimidate us. That's what they do best. They threaten us, creating and supporting doubt in God, thereby keeping fear at the forefront of our heart and mind. Due to the reality of facing giants on this side of heaven, there are many voices calling out to you and I. And you are the one who has to choose which voice you will listen to and believe. Sometimes the giant can sound convincing. And sometimes they're right. But as the great Puritan writer Richard Sibb said, don't ever believe the devil, even when he's telling you the truth. Because his purpose in telling you the truth is to hurt. He never speaks it, Ephesians 4, speaking the truth in love. So sometimes the giant can sound convincing. Fear blocks out the voice of truth. Fear can grip your heart so quickly it can overwhelm you. It can spiritually paralyze you. When we allow fear to reign in our hearts, I want you to notice this on your study guide, it causes us to either forget, ignore, distort, or reject God and His promises. That's what fear does. When fear moves in, when fear overshadows God's rightful place in your heart, it can cause us to forget who God is and what He has done and what He has promised. Or it causes us to ignore God and His promises, or causes us to distort God and His promises. And sometimes, and I would say for most believers, rejecting is not the main issue. It's usually forgetting, ignoring, distorting who God is. But this is what happens when fear makes its way into our heart. But it doesn't have to be that way. There's some great news. Fear must give way to legitimate biblical faith. Every time faith calls out to Christ, fear must surrender. That does not mean the giants necessarily leave. It doesn't mean that the giants lose or die, but it does mean fear no longer robs us from glorifying God, and it means that we have a peace that passes human understanding. It doesn't ignore human reasoning, it surpasses it. Fear highlights circumstances. That's what it does best. Faith highlights Christ. Would you say that with me this morning? Fear highlights circumstances. Faith highlights Christ. Reference Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 and many more. Now in 1 Samuel 17, we have the account of David and Goliath, the familiar story to most of us. My prayer is, I spent some time last night prostrate on my office floor with the membership roll at hand, praying for every one of you and your families and your children. And my prayer is that today you would make the appropriate applications of David to your life. Well, we're in 1 Samuel 17. Notice verse 3 and 4. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them, and there went out a champion of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And we don't talk that way anymore. How tall are you? Well, I'm about 5 cubits and so many spans. Well, a cubic is 18 inches. So you have 9 feet and a span is half of that, about 9 inches. You have this giant Goliath somewhere around 9.5 to 10 feet tall. To give you an idea, this behind me here, to the top of this, is 9.5 feet. Just to give you some type of an idea. Now, his shoulders weren't quite that wide. Standing over 9 feet tall, his armor weighed 126 pounds. David was a young teenager at this time and probably didn't weigh much more than that himself. Goliath's spear, the spear head, was 16 pounds. He had a helmet of brass. He had an armor bearer that went before him. For obvious reasons, his mere presence brought great fear upon the entire army of Israel. Now, for 27 years, there had not been a major fight between the Philistines and Israel. However, border battling was increasing, and it was time to determine which nation would be in charge of the borders. So it made logical sense for the Philistines to make an offer of having one soldier from each army fight. And the winning soldier, his nation takes all. And verse 9 lets us know the fight was to death. Well, we see the following in 1 Samuel 17, verses 10 through 16. King Saul, the first king of Israel, and all of his army responded to Goliath's challenge, just as we thought, in great fear. We see that Jesse is the father of 8 sons, and David being the youngest, 7 big brothers. We see that the 3 oldest sons of Jesse went to battle, and David cared for the sheep. We see that Goliath's threats went on for 40 days. Over a month, he would come to and challenge, just send one man who will fight me. Well, in verses 17 and 19, we read that Jesse asked David to carry some food to his brothers who were away at the battle. This would also provide an opportunity for Jesse to check on his 3 oldest sons. What I want us to notice now is something very important. It deals with David's walk with God long before he ever came face to face with a giant. David walked with God on a consistent basis prior to being placed in a situation like this. And he, along with 2 entire nations, the Philistines and the Jews, were about to discover just how important spiritual preparation is. Yes, it is true, trials do build character, but often what trials do is reveal character. As one husband said to his wife, "You bring out the worst in me." In which the wise counselor said, "She can only bring out what's in there." So David walked with God long before he ever came face to face with Goliath. Let's notice these practical applications from this passage. Number one, David was an obedient son. Verse 20. And David rose up early in the morning. No excuses, no delays. He did not have to be coaxed, bribed, or threatened. He had a heart that enjoyed obeying his father. We all know it's exciting and easy to get up early to go to Cedar Point or on a golf trip or on vacation or whatever else we desire to do. But David got up early to honor his dad's command. He found great pleasure in pleasing his dad. Secondly, David was responsible as a shepherd. Again, verse 20, David rose up early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took and went as Jesse, his dad, had commanded him. He did not disregard his first and primary responsibility, which was to care for the sheep. It would have been easy to say, "Hey, Dad, since I have to go and take some food to my big brothers, you take care of the sheep." He didn't do that. He found someone to take over. And this is the kind of employee any supervisor would love to have, and this is the kind of a church member any pastor would love to have. They make a commitment, and they follow through. There's two words that describe church members like this: faithful and reliable. And grace is filled with members like this. May we get more. And may some of you become more faithful and reliable throughout 2009. Thirdly, he was a defender of God. Verse 26, and David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that kills this Philistine?" Well, we see an act of faith here. He's talking about, hey, we're going to kill this giant. "Takes away the reproach from Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living Elohim?" Now, God does not need anyone to defend him. All right? We know that. He had one angel kill 185 Assyrian soldiers. One angel. God doesn't need our help, per se. His will be accomplished. The question is, you want to be a part of that? You want to be a part of what's going to happen? Because it's going to happen. That's not the point, God needing to defend it. The point is that David was offended that someone would mock God. You know, the character of a person is seen by what makes them laugh, what they laugh at, and what they cry at. What we allow ourselves to listen to and watch in the name of entertainment that often dishonors God. It increases our temptation to sensual and materialistic appetites, often forfeiting our own quiet time with God. In our quiet prayer time and Bible study, there's no public audience. But God is watching. Every time we resist sensual and carnal entertainment for the purpose of honoring His holy name, that He would not be mocked. Fourthly, David was willing to face criticism. Verse 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, when he spake unto the men, or heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." Do you see who Eliab's angry at? It's David. He lost sight of who the enemy was and who the enemy was not. The church in general in America gets a poor grade here. Finding what we disagree upon and highlighting that and being critical and negative against the body of Christ. And yes, we have brothers and sisters of other denominations who don't agree with everything that we teach. They've got it wrong, but that's okay. But if they have the gospel right, that salvation is in the person of Jesus Christ and Jesus Christ alone, not the Ten Commandments, not being a church member, not being a Baptist or a Presbyterian or a Methodist or a Catholic or whatever. If they've got the gospel right, we're on the same team. Now, is doctrine important? Yes, it's important. And we will preach Baptist doctrine. But we got to know who our enemy is. And now Eliab, David's older brother, is angry at David. Notice how he degrades him in front of the other men. And by the way, David, with whom have you left those few sheep? You see what's going on here? You're just a little shepherd who's responsible for a few sheep. And then he says, "I know your heart. I know your pride. I know why you're here. Eliab, you were wrong on all accounts. You were wrong on all accounts." But I'll tell you this. These accusations would cause many a would-be giant slayer to go home pouting. Fine. You won't do it my way? I'll take my toys and I'll go home. I reached out and somebody criticized me. I was misrepresented. Yeah. David was humiliated, deeply hurt, but he would not allow any of those obstacles to stop him from doing what was right. Five, David knew when to fight. Verse 29, and David said in response to his older brother, he just asked a question. What have I now done? Is there not a cause? He didn't attack back. You ever notice this about your life? Sinners, though saved and redeemed, sinners tend to respond sinfully and being sinned against. You ever notice that? Sinners tend to respond sinfully and being sinned against. Let's paraphrase it, tit for tat. All right, now it's my serve. And I can put a little more heat on my serve than you did yours. Now it's back in your court. Far too many believers fight over the wrong issues and fight the wrong person. How refreshing it is to see believers who see the bigger picture. They get it. They realize God's glory is priority one. They understand that life is too short and hell is too hot, eternity is too long to worry about, complain over personal taste and agendas. Most of Grace Baptist Church membership gets a good grade in this area. Keep it up. Others do better in 09. Six, David learned how to turn conflicts into valuable lessons of life. Verse 36, "Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." When word got to King Saul that someone's willing to fight Goliath, he thought, okay, great, 40 days, we finally have someone. Who is it? And they said, it's Eliab's little brother. Well, which one? The youngest. The shepherd. The teenager. King Saul's natural response would be, nice try, kid. And David's response is, look, I watched these sheep and a lion attacked my sheep and I killed the lion. And I killed a bear. This giant will be one of them. Oh, my dear brother and sister, God is using your current circumstances to mold you and to prepare you for His service and for future giants. Stop playing the victim. Stop living like the world is against you and everyone and everything is against you. Embrace Romans 8, 28 and 29. Give God a chance to work in your life. Be committed. Give God time to work in your life. Be patient. God is sovereign. I could not go forward as a pastor if I didn't embrace the fact that God is sovereign, that He's in control. Many of you, and I thank you, have commented repeatedly how this series has helped you over and over again, this heart series. Only God knows the price I've paid the last year and a half in preparation to give them to you. If you haven't figured it out after 24 messages, let me let you in a little clue. All you're seeing up here is Pastor Jerry revealed. But I figure since you're here, you might as well listen as well. Because I got a feeling, if I wrestle with these heart issues, there's a good chance you do too. But there is a price to be paid from my heart in order to prepare them. A price that if I had my way, I would not pay. But God is sovereign. And the bears and the lions are there to prepare you for the giants. Seven, David knew where his strength came from. Verse 37, David said, moreover, Yahweh that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, which kind of lets us know he wasn't necessarily shooting an arrow. He was close to these wild beasts. He will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistines. Now we can face our giants in the power of our own strength and fail in a miserable way, or we can face the giants in our own strength, and you ready for this? Something worse than failing, we can succeed in even a more miserable manner. You see, failure in our own strength breeds despair. To be disappointed in oneself is to have trusted in oneself. As one wise saint lovingly, rebukingly told me, get off the pedestal. You're a sinner preaching to sinners. Failure in our own strength breeds despair. Success in our own strength breeds pride, self-righteousness. Failure or success in God's strength builds godliness, patience, endurance, and faith. David knew God was the one who empowered him to battle the lion and the bear. 8. David knew to be himself and did not attempt to be someone he wasn't. Now, you're used to me by now, how I look, but I don't fly often or travel up. But if I go to places where people don't know me, do you know who you could pass for? And I hear it all the time. Brad Pitt. Okay. Been tempted many times to start a service by saying, open your Bibles now. Deal or no deal. Howie Mandel. David knew he wasn't a soldier. He's just a teenage shepherd. And he wasn't going to attempt to be somebody he wasn't. Saul provided David with his armor, his own armor. And by the way, most of you know, King Saul was the tallest soldier of any of the Jews. He was exceptionally tall for a Jew. He takes his armor and his weapons and he puts them on David. And here's David with Saul's armor. And he's saying, this just isn't right. It's not me. And he lays it all aside. To be free from the opinions and expectations of others is an exhilarating experience in which I rarely know. Because every single member has an expectation of what your pastor should be. And it doesn't stop there. I, as your pastor, have the expectations of what you should be. And sometimes those are biblical, but most of the time they're not. To be free. To totally die to self, to live in a path, to breathe air that says, nothing to prove, only Christ to please. Has to be heaven on earth. And there are moments I breathe that air. Oh, And it is wonderful. Nine, David placed his actions where his words were. He headed for the stream after dropping off Saul's armor and sword and spear and shield. He headed for a stream and reached down while the soldiers are watching, and he gathered five small stones. Placed them in a shepherd's pouch. Gripped his sling in his hand and headed off to face Goliath. He didn't just say he would fight Goliath. He walked directly up to this Philistine soldier with a sling and a pouch full of rocks. And it humiliated Goliath. Which brings us to the 10th point. David refused to be intimidated by the words of the giant. Casting Crowns has a song out entitled "The Voice of Truth." Jeff Sills has sung it here on a number of occasions. It lays out in an excellent way the message we've been talking about with fear. The first part of the song talks about the storms on the Sea of Galilee. And the second part talks about David and Goliath. Here's how it goes, and I will not sing it. Oh, what I would do to have the kind of strength it takes to stand before a giant with just a sling and a stone. Surrounded by the sound of 1,000 warriors shaking in their armor, wishing they have had the strength to stand. But the giant's calling out my name and he laughs at me, reminding me of all the times I tried before and failed. The giant keeps on telling me time and time again, boy, you'll never win. You'll never win. But the voice of truth tells me a different story. The voice of truth says, do not be afraid. The voice of truth says, this is for my glory. Out of all the voices calling out to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth. Well, verse 43. The Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest out to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then David